Chapter 6. Ezekarian.
I know the cadence of that beating heart. I know the smell of that skin, the tang of those bionics, the scent of those consecrated weapon oils. Inquisitor Soroka, we meet again. Welcome, dutiful agent of the throne. Welcome to my parlour. Please forgive me for not offering you refreshment. The warded chains that steal my sixth sense and bind me to this pillar have savaged my ability to play the kindly host. I feel your gaze upon my eyeless face as keenly as these hexagramic restraints that sear my flesh. You have come for answers, no doubt. But to which questions? No, say nothing. Let there be no pretense between us. I know where you have been and what brings you back before me now. Your scrabbling, delving efforts into your order's deepest archives have dredged up mention of Moriana. Just as I warned you they would. You are beginning to believe me, are you not? You are beginning to believe the words of an arch-heretic. Moriana is one of those names that slither through the veins of history. Is it the same woman? Can it be true? Can it be that one of the founders of your sacred Inquisition is the very creature that whispered prophetic poison into my brother's ear? Can it be that the inceptor of your precious ideals chose later in her unnaturally long life to abandon them? Was she a warrior handmaiden of the Emperor who saw the light, or an archaeoscientific vizier in one of his laboratories who looked too long into the dark? Both? Neither. Someone before you has been seeking truth in the shadows. Where did you find this lore, Inquisitor Soroka? In whose archives were these words hidden? Your masters, perhaps? The man or woman that taught you and trained you? The merciless predecessor that fashioned you into the weapon of imperial lore I sense before me now? Oh, very well. Keep your silence. I will speak on. We made ready for war in the wake of the prophetess's words. The fleet mustered. We left garrisons at our grandest fortresses and arranged the barest bones patrols on the edges of our domain. But the heart of our sanctuary nebula played home to almost every able vessel in our armada, from the vastest battleship to the sleekest frigate to the bulkiest troop conveyor. The Ezekarian oversaw this great gathering, while Abaddon, in a move that shocked all of us, sealed himself away in seclusion with Moriana. The officers' perspectives on this were divided. Ashokai was captivated by the new seer, aching to speak with her, his scarlet albino gaze shining with a hunger no different to that of a starving man suddenly presented with a feast. He craved her insight and wanted nothing more than to follow the paths of fate at her side, learning all that she knew, seeing all that she had seen. Ezekiel has sealed himself away from his sworn inner circle, I argued with Ashokai at one point, as we stood upon the vengeful spirit's bridge atop his navigation platform, above the rest of the command deck. How does that not trouble you?
He has questions, my former master replied. She brings answers.
He's never exiled himself away from us before.
This is beginning to sound like a tantrum of an ignored child, Ashokai replied, his tone mild.
But I would not be dissuaded by mockery, no matter how gentle or well-intentioned. Think of his degeneration these last years. Think of the voices in the warp that sing his name, practically praying to him. And now this? Do not mistake my caution for cowardice. He turned his white features to me, and I knew from the starved look in his retinal red eyes that I was arguing in futility.
She has brought the answers our Lord sought. The only good is knowledge, Sir Kandor. The only evil is ignorance.
That is a saying uttered by as many fools as visionaries, I pointed out, and an attitude that has led to damnation more than once. The last man to speak those words in my presence doomed our legion.
Bye!
Takura psychically cawed at me from its master's shoulder.
Bye is frightened.
Hush, crow, lest I feed you to my lynx. Nagual would enjoy that.
You should not be afraid,
Ashokai continued, as if his familiar had spoken true.
See her arrival for what it is. An opportunity like no other.
I do not trust her, I said, which were words I would say innumerable times across the centuries to come.
Then don't trust her,
Ashokai said as he turned back to the oculus, his long white hair falling to half-mask his features.
But don't waste the chance to learn from her.
He had every reason to be ill-tempered and distracted, given his role in the war to come. He was the Armada's most gifted voidseer, tasked with coordinating and aligning the efforts of every sorcerer in the fleet for the attempt to break out of the Eye's pull. To even brush against his mind was to feel a dense web of overlapping murmurs that threatened to drag me inside, adding my presence to the processes of what must be calculated and the variables that must be considered. We were asking our voidseers to sail near blind and deaf through a realm where physical law had no grip, and to maintain the fleet's formation while doing so. In all the years of the Nine Legions' exile, nothing on this scale had yet been attempted. We were certain to lose several ships, and braced to lose most of them.
Hezekiah will summon us when he wishes us to attend him,
Ashokai insisted. He met my eyes with his watery albino gaze. Fascination for all that Mariana represented still burned there, no matter how distracted he was by the coming trial. I touched my fingertips to my heart in that old Chthonian gesture that had crept its way through the Legion, the gesture of one speaking the truth. Sometimes I wish I had your faith, Master. The old honorific. Just this once. It made him smile before he turned away and resumed his work. Among my other contemporaries, between their faith, patience, or indifference, none of the Ezekarian shared my preference for caution. Telemachon reacted to Mariana's favour with Abaddon, much as I had suspected he would. His behaviour was nothing but parasitically loyal, to the point that he even stationed several of his raptors outside Abaddon's palatial quarters, ostensibly standing guard with Falcus's aphotic blade. It was a gesture, rather than a necessity, but as ever it was a cunning and valuable one. Mariana took note of it on her emergence, just as she noted those among the Ezekarian that showed less in the way of trust. We risked much as the fleet mustered. We lost territory that was left inadequately defended, surrendering it to the other legions rather than put up doomed resistance. The heartlands of our dominion remained as heavily patrolled as we could manage, but we paid in lost worlds at the frontiers. To our rivals, and indeed many of our allies, we practically vanished from the Eye, concerned only with amassing our strength in secret. Around the vengeful spirit, a fleet gathered of such size that even jaded veterans often stopped to stare at the host of warships at anchor in the murky void. Valakar, once guardian of Niobia Halo and now master of the fleet, was in constant contact from aboard his battleship, the Thane. His trust in Abaddon was absolute. He exloaded a stream of updates to the flagship with calculated efficiency, oversaw the muster in Abaddon's absence, and never once demanded to speak with our liege lord. We made ready for the war we had wanted to wage for centuries, yet I could not overcome my hesitation over the true reasons we would be fighting it. The sword, Mariana had said with such perfect assurance.
You have a choice, Ezekiel Abaddon. Wield the sword that you see in your dreams, or be killed by it.
None of us knew, not then, what the sword was. Abaddon had told us nothing before retreating into seclusion, except that we were to make the final preparations to leave the Eye. Mariana's words were all the more unsettling for the way she knew that which we did not. That sword. By the shifting many, how much of what we have done has its roots in the wielding of Abaddon's sword? Oceans of Imperial blood have run beneath that blade's edge. Rivers of our own have flowed because of it. We fought a crusade to claim it. We have spent an eternity slaughtering those that would take it for themselves. In Chthonian, the blade is called Asag, or Oblivion. In Nagrakali, the blunt mongrel tongue of Lahior's former legion, it is Scaravore, or Crown Render. In Tiscan Prosperine, the language of the city of my birth, it is Mal Atar Sai, the Shard of Madness. To Nefertari's people, it is Suritha, the Thorn in reality, a name spoken only as the Blackest Curse. These are all imperfect translations of the weapon's true name, for the blade was forged in no mortal realm, nor was it fashioned by mortal hands. In the wordless, soul-born language of the warp's winds, within the eternal howling of the demonic choirs, echoes the name Drak-Nayen. This is no word as the human mind would understand it, for it's not an utterance, but a concept. Within the eternal song of howling, weeping madness, is the fate-spun promise of the Emperor's death, of his imperium carved clean of ignorance and false faith. That chorus, that concept roared into demonic essence, is Drak-Nayen. This is what our languages try and fail to distill into spoken words. Usag, Scaravore, Mal Atar Sai. They are all aspects of the same thing. Drak-Nayen, the end of empires. A creature with its genesis in the warp-threaded conviction that it exists only to kill humanity's king. That which you call chaos, or the ruinous powers, that which we call the pantheon, this essence, this energy, does not obey us. It is not an entity unilaterally supporting us, or a reliable weapon that serves our needs. It uses us. It elevates us for the purposes of its own whims. It is a force of honesty, true, making us wear our sins on our armoured skin, but it is also the essence of absolute deception, shifting and warping whatever it wishes to pursue its own conflicting ends. It is the crashing, clashing energies of every memory, emotion, and agony felt by every human since the dawn of time, with the same suffering of countless alien species flavouring the resultant matter. It can be used, but only if you are willing to be used in turn. It can be worshipped and begged, but only if you are willing to risk damnation along with ascension. It is a force flowing through the veins of reality, one that chooses us and marks us as its puppets as well as its champions. That cannot be stated enough. It is not on our side. Many of us spend our lives fighting it and resisting it far more often than beseeching it. Abaddon's blade is one such aspect. As I hang here, chained and bound in the tender care of your Inquisition, though I crave to be back with my brothers and doing the War Master's work, there is one comfort in my captivity. It is a blessed relief to be this far from Drak-Nayen. I can still hear it whisper at the edge of my mind, even with my powers stripped from me. But I can no longer hear it laughing. No longer does it seep into the core of my being, a distraction and an infection, a demon only content when it is rending reality apart and leaving formless chaos in its wake. It is said that the weapon is only a sword at all because Ezekiel wills it to take that shape. I can tell you this is true. It is not a sword. It is scarcely even a demon. It is said among the legions that this was the gods' first gift to win Abaddon to their cause. If so, it was by no means their last. But I do not believe it was the first. No. That dubious honour belongs to another. Drak-Nayen was the second of the Pantheon's treacherous bribes. I have no doubt that the first was far more insidious, no less bloodthirsty, and calls herself Moriana. Abaddon maintained his self-exile for weeks, taking counsel alone with his new prophetess. When at last he emerged, he summoned us to Lupercal's court. Every one of the Ezekarian answered this call, even Ashakai and Valakar, who were both reluctant to leave their duties in the hands of their lieutenants for any time at all. I answered that summons with a sense of purpose I had not felt in some time. Ezekiel had promised me answers upon my return from Melium, and one way or another I would have them. That included enlightenment regarding this sword that Morianna insisted Abaddon was fated to claim. No more whispers of what may or may not be. It was time for answers. I would tolerate no refusal. The Ezekarian assembled in Lupercal's court. Here, where the failed war master of the Imperium had gathered his lackeys and minions, Abaddon instead gathered his brothers and sisters. We stood beneath banners of Imperial conquest long since rendered meaningless by our betrayals, and in this great chamber where galactic civil war was first planned, we took a quieter council amongst the cobwebs. Horus had listened to cheers in here, with half of the Imperium chanting his name. We listened to the squealing of rats and the wet feasting sounds of things that had mutated far from their verminous origins. Whatever they were, they and the rats they had evolved from kept to the shadows. Sanguinius was there. Noble Sanguinius, Primarch of the Blood Angels Legion, was there in all his glory. And I saw Sargon hesitate upon entering. He considered the Primarch's manifestation an omen, and likely a bad one. Sanguinius was formed of psychically resonant crystal, as were all of the echoes of those slain aboard the vengeful spirit throughout its long history. Corridors and hallways across the ship were rhymed with these outgrowths, and they formed most frequently after battle or tumultuous journeys through the eye. I'd become accustomed to them. They had been the very first things we had seen when we initially came aboard the vengeful spirit in our hunt for Abaddon. They were mindless statues of hazy crystal, easy to dismiss unless one were foolish enough to touch them. They sang when touched, psychically offering numbed images and sensations of their deaths in last useless gasps of a soul's energy. The phenomenon had briefly fascinated me, but I soon relegated it as beneath notice. Sanguinius had died aboard the vengeful spirit, and here his ghost remained, as the warp-saturated steel of the ship's hull resurrected the Primarch, along with the other fallen. This was not the first time I had seen Sanguinius's crystalline shade. I had shattered it once, intrigued by the potency of the crystal shards, and one of them served now as the smooth pommel jewel of my force sword Sacramentum. The crystal Primarch always regrew, sometimes here, sometimes elsewhere, just as the other crystal corpses across the ship always regenerated after shattering. Ashokai bowed his head as he passed the kneeling angel, paying respect to the agony etched upon that perfect face of stained diamond. Most of the others ignored it, save for Lior, who gave a pained grin at the sight. He idly swung his chain axe as he passed, the weapon's teeth briefly roaring, biting and breaking one of the immense wings from the body. I felt a twinge of psychic expression from the crystal ghost, a stab of false pain from the psi crystals. "Another glorious victory," I chided my brother. He turned the grin on me, moving to my side. There was no real amusement in his eyes. The first surprise was that Iliaster joined the gathering, his desiccated visage and patchy remnants of hair rendering him skullish and without humour. His sunken gaze drifted across those of us that had already gathered, and he nodded with a formality he would soon learn was unnecessary in this company.
"I am Ezekarian," he said in his desert tomb voice.
None of us argued. He was welcomed with nods and a few fists banging against breastplates. He too halted at the sight of the now one-winged crystal incarnation of a dead Primarch, kneeling in torment beneath the banners of old wars. He processed what he was seeing, but rather than mutilate the thing, he simply walked around it, just as absorbed in the history hanging from the Gothic rafters. These meetings of the Legion's commanders were the most visible efforts to bring order from disorder. We would speak of supply lines, resources, materiel, formations, crew numbers, targets, duties. In short, we would behave as if we were an organized fighting force, not a disparate conclave of warband leaders bound together in a realm that defied physics and military logistics. Every warrior would speak their piece, citing their relevant contributions. Abaddon, in turn, would hold court in relative silence. He knew the value of letting his sub-commanders exercise their authority, and, as with any army, feed on their various rivalries. Officers were driven not just to excel before Abaddon and earn his sparse praise, but to exceed the deeds and usefulness of their kindred's warbands, impressing the Ezekarian and putting themselves in the running to serve the legion's highest commanders. Abaddon was cautious with his compliments, but one truth was always in evidence. Those who quelled internal rivalry within their warbands, either by charisma, murder, or ritual challenges, those who could be trusted to fight reliably and not abandon battle plans at the whim of their own blood greed or to heed the calls of the gods, these were, without fail, the warriors who were most often rewarded. To them fell the positions of honour and glory within every assault, and the Ezekarian leaned most heavily upon them to secure victory. They became the backbone of the Black Legion. War-frothing raiders and treacherous mercenaries have their uses in any conflict, do not doubt. But Abaddon has always willed the Black Legion to be more than another gathering of howling slavers and psalm-chanting reavers. As common as those aspects are within our ranks, we do not let ourselves be defined by them. No true organization would be possible if we did. None of us were surprised when Mariana entered. The only unexpected element in her appearance was that she wasn't at Abaddon's side. She didn't make anything of her entrance, merely walking through the great double doors and taking her place near to Telemachon, who stood with calculated insouciance. She greeted him with a hand briefly on his vambrace, the gesture somehow sisterly. Their heads bowed together in murmured conversation. She smiled as she spoke, and his aura flared in response, a greasy brightening of bitter amusement. We stood in a loose circle, gathered but separate, as was our informal custom. Phalcus, the first, Sargon, the second, I, the third, Telemachon, the fourth, Lahior, the fifth, Ashokai, the sixth, Seraxia, the seventh, Valakar, the eighth, Vortigern, the ninth, Amuriel, the tenth, Iliaster, the 11th, and Moriana, though she had said nothing of it, evidently the 12th. Ezekiel was last of all, stalking with slow, grinding growls of his Terminator battleplate. At gatherings of our warbands, he would always take the focal point of attention, drawing all eyes towards him and calling out across the gathered masses. Here, among his trusted kin, he merely joined the circle we had formed. Once more I was struck by how unconscionably weary he was. If we had expected his time alone with Moriana and her serpent-tongued prophecies to illuminate and revitalize him, we were both right and wrong. Ferocity blazed in his eyes, the ferocity of reborn purpose, but it was the effort of a man on the very brink of ruin. Whatever had rejuvenated him, be it knowledge or something more sinister, it was also eating him alive. "The fleet will sail for the Eye's Edge," he ordered. "We will declare war on the Imperium and the corpse that occupies its throne. If Sigismund's Black Templars stand in our way, we will break them. If Tagus Daravec opposes us, we will destroy him. If any of you have questions, now is the time." So casually did he state his galaxy-changing intent that several of us smiled, myself included. But as expected, all eyes turned to me, so certain that I would be the first to speak. This time, however, it was Ashokai.
"We are prepared, Ezekiel. Every void guide and sorcerer aboard every vessel in the Armada is ready to weather the storm."
I could see the weight he bore on his shoulders, and for a moment I felt a stab of sympathy. He fought a war I could not help with, one far harder than the games we assassins played. He had to lead the Legion from unreality into reality, breaking us free of a prison the gods themselves kept closed.
"You have my trust and faith," Abaddon replied solemnly.
"My thanks, brother,"
Ashokai said, inclining his head. Abaddon looked around the circle.
"Who else?"
They all looked to me again, but I did not speak second either. That fell to Amuriel.
"We sail for the Imperium," he said, An event we have all fought and bled to bring about is finally here, and every warrior in the fleet stands ready. Outside this ship, a legion's worth of warships await our signal to sail. But I am asking you, brother to brother, why are we declaring war on the Imperium now?
Ezekiel looked across the circle at him, golden eyes locked.
This is what we have hungered for, he replied. This is what we have worked towards. You ask why we will declare the war now? Because we can, brother. Because finally we can.
That isn't what I'm asking. Do we wage this war by your command?
Amuriel indicated Moriana with a cursory wave of one hand.
Or on her whim?
This war is a matter of vindicta,
Abaddon replied, using the High Gothic word for vengeance, knowing its resonance among our kind.
It has always been about revenge, Amuriel. Our revenge. Moriana's appearance is merely a fortunate twist of fate. We would sail with or without her. You know this, brother.
Amuriel nodded, though not at once. The hesitation was telling, even if I had been unable to read the surface thoughts drifting through his aura. He trusted Abaddon, but Moriana was an outside agent, and she stank of manipulation, more than measured guidance. Moriana, for her part, said nothing. That was wise, for Amuriel's sentiments were shared by most of us there that day. We accepted her, or at least tolerated her, but we did not know her.
Does it matter?
Asked Vortigern. His face was severe, his expressions forever cold. In all my life, I've met no soul as serious as Vortigern of Caliban.
I will fight by your side either way,
he said to Abaddon, hand resting on the hilt of his sheathed sword.
Whatever this human's motivations may be, they are irrelevant to us. Our plans remain unchanged, do they not?
Lahior nodded, the movement a brief jerk of the head. Even back then he was beginning to lose control of his body, his nervous system at the mercy of the adrenal pain engine in his skull.
Matters to me, he grunted. Tell us what the witch said, Ezekiel. No secrets here.
Abaddon nodded.
No secrets here, he agreed. And answers will come. Armsmistress, you have remained silent thus far. I would hear your thoughts if you would share them.
Ceraxia towered above us, looking down from within the shadows of her hooded robe. I could just make out the softly rotating eye lenses in that shrouded gloom, and the dark metal polish of her re-sculpted form. Her segmented, scorpion-like legs hissed and clicked with adjustments of minute pistons. Each of her lower limbs ended in a great blade that left scratching dents in the deck. This four-armed, spider-legged machine goddess drew forth from her robe the Black Templar's helm that I had recovered from Malium, and though it would have undoubtedly made a more emphatic point if she dropped it onto the deck, such was her reverence for its manufacture that she kept it clutched in two of her hands, close to her red-robed form. Not a trophy to her, but a holy icon.
"I care not for the poems of seers,"
she said, emitting her words from a vocalizer formed by her fused, clenched golden teeth. A pale light flickered through this metallic fusion with every syllable.
"Or warriors reasoning for revenge. The fleet is ready, so the fleet shall sail. We have evidence of further wonders developed by the Martian Mechanicum in our absence from the principal materium. Examples of such treasures must be brought into our possession, unmade, remade, and knowledge of their form and function secured for our own use."
I cut through this with a chop of my hand.
"With respect, Ceraxia, Ezekiel, tell us what we came to learn. Tell us what devours you, and what this seer means when she speaks of fate riding upon the blade of an unclaimed sword."
"It's always you, Kaon," he said with a weary smile. "My assassin and my accuser.
I am what you need me to be, brother."
He met my eyes, nodded once in acknowledgement, and then, at last, he told us.